We'll take a break halfway through what I'm saying, and we'll do some exercises and stand up, sit down, and warm up, get the circulation going again. By the time that the middle of the 7th century BC had come, Israel was in a desperate state. From the high point of David, King David, and God being right in the center of this nation, and David leading people and demonstrating, and the people being with him, and God's presence being evident amongst them, the nation had been divided in two. There were two kingdoms with two competing kings. The northern kingdom called itself Israel, and the southern kingdom called itself Judah. And they had got to a fine art, the practice of being God's people. They kept the law, and they did it to the detail, dare I say, religiously, but their heart was not in it. And as a consequence of that, God's heart was broken. God's heart was broken because his heart was broken and crying out and saying, "This is not what I came into covenant with my people for. In letter, you keep the covenant, but in your heart, you're far from me." And as a relatively young man, God called Isaiah. And we read in chapter 6 of Isaiah of how God broke into his life and got his number big time, got his attention, and showed him, and in a vision, impacted his life, what God was like, and chose him to be his voice, chose Isaiah to speak for him. And it was obvious to Isaiah, he saw it, God was going to be judging his people, because this cannot continue the way it is. And the Assyrians were massing and causing trouble on the north and the east to them as a nation. And there were troubles afoot. God's going to use them. No. God's going to use them. And so much of what Isaiah brings to the people is pretty sad and pretty grim. Particularly if you happen to live in 7th century BC, Israel or Judah. But it wasn't all like that. Let's read together, if you could pop it up on the screen. We come into verse 2 of chapter 9. And in the midst of judgment, God gives Isaiah this to speak. "The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you." Obviously addressing to God. "They rejoice before you. As a people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the days of Midian's defeat," going back to the early history of Israel, "you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning and will be fuel for the fire. It's going to be dealt with. All the fighting and the wars finished. For to us a child is born. To us a son is given. And the government will be on his shoulder, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. I don't know about you, but generally people today, government evokes all sorts of emotions and bad language. So I'm not going to put you to the test and ask you, you know, what do you think about government? But the whole world, but Isaiah says there's going to be a new government. And the government's going to be on this one's shoulders, the one that's going to come. And there's going to be no end geographically, physically, and temporally in time. There's going to be no end to this government. I'm not sure that it would be quite correct to say that it's just because of our modern media. And we have Facebook and Twitter and Twatter and all the rest of them and what have you. But we have this season now of openness and information and all the rest of it. And we see our politicians pretty much as they are. And cynicism in relation to politics in this country and in other countries, particularly with our sort of system, is rampant. Because we see what they're like. We hear what they're like. And the qualifications, I've got to be careful here, so help me here. Yeah, advise me, think nice thoughts. So often the qualifications are to be in government, you have to be sharp, you have to be clever, you have to be able to manipulate, you know how to manage people and situations, you know how to talk out of both sides of your mouth, let's keep it to mouth, shall we, both sides of the mouth at one time. And to be able to say yes, 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 but actually mean no, no, no. You can have this, but actually we're going to take that away. That's what politicians do. How on earth do they manage it else? And I got a little bit drawn in, this is an aside, I got a little bit drawn into another country, but I wonder if there are any similarities with the American version of House of Cards. And talk about manipulation and control. Talk about rampant power. Talk about controlling, manipulating people in order to achieve. I mean, that's what governments do, isn't it? Okay, that's a cynical program. But also, this kingdom that's being talked about, this government that's talked about is. What does he say in I've lost which verse it is. In verse 7, yeah. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it. We have a history. Excuse me for my sniffings, but it's brought on by this wonderful fresh air that's coming from the side. It's just the end of a cold, I assure you. So if I keep sniffing and... Excuse me. We have a lot of history, don't we? We have a lot of history. And we know about kings and queens in this country. Sorry, I'm speaking to us British people. If you're not British, have mercy on us. Have pity on us. We have a lot of experience. Generally speaking, depending on what side of the divide you're on, but generally speaking, our history has not been brilliant. Our kings and our queens, they have not actually done us well. And the image we have of rulership is maybe not the best. I've also, as watching House of Cards, I've been getting into some of these for this last year. I've had the opportunity of reading novels and the historical novels round about the different series round about the Tudors. And wow, weren't they bad? Weren't they cruel? So the image even of reigning is not exactly brilliant. As an aside, we're blessed to have Lizzie as our queen for the last X number of years, and I'm sure that her son, because he's getting all the papers and the documents from the cabinet office. I'm sure that will really help him for the future. Without making any comment about our situation today, generally speaking, kings and people who reign have a bad press. So what has God got in mind? I'm going to give you a child. A child is going to be born to you. Not just a child, but a baby. A baby is going to be born to you. And on his shoulders, there are a few here who are very close to what it is to having a baby and know exactly what babyhood looks like. You're doing great at the back, Becky. Well done. All of us have been there. All of us have been there. Some of us been very close in the not too distant past. We've all been babies. We've all been connected with families and babies, and we know. What are the marks of a baby? What are the marks of a baby? The marks of a baby is dependence upon mum, dependence on dad. God's going to send a baby. We've done Superman, we've done Superwoman. This baby is not going to be Super Babe. This baby that is going to come is going to be an ordinary baby, and he's going to demonstrate what it is to be a baby. He's going to do poos. He's going to, seriously, he's going to throw up all over. He's going to throw up over Mary after he's had his milk. He's going to yell in the middle of the night. He's going to wake up the kids, and dad and mum are going to pull out their hair. Are we ever going to get any sleep? Thank you. I've got support over there. This is what I'm going to give you. This is what I'm going to give. I'm going to give you a baby, a little child who's going to grow as a child, who's going to teethe at night and during the day, and is going to be misery to be with, because he's human just like us. He's coming into our world. This is what I'm giving you. For unto you a baby is born to you. A baby is born to you. In weakness and in dependence upon mum and dad, and is going to have to learn. And is going to have to learn what it is to be a child, and what it is to become an adult. Jesus was the fulfillment of this. We're looking back and we're convinced of that. Jesus fits 100%, but he came in total weakness and dependence and vulnerability. Jesus was totally vulnerable, as every child and every baby is. Unto you a child is born. Unto you a son is given. Jesus was not just a child. God was saying, I'm giving you a son. And I'm giving you, we now know it, I'm giving you my son. God the Father says, I've got an awful lot in store for you, and I'm going to give you my very best. The son that I'm going to give you was the one that was there before time with me, arm in arm, hand in hand, shoulder to shoulder, and said, let the light shine. Let it all come into being. It was, picture language, he threw all the stars into their orbit, and we have this incredible thing we call our world. That's the son I'm sending you. And I'm sending him to you. This is so weird. This is absolutely looked at with our scientific glasses on. There's nothing wrong with science. Absolutely. But that's an aside. I'm not going to go into it. There's no contradiction between science getting to understand what God's done and God himself or his word. But with our scientific, logical minds on, we say, this is ridiculous. That the one that is going to come and make this all special would come as a child and as a baby. That my son would actually, that's as ridiculous. It's up for ridicule. That's what the word ridiculous means, isn't it? It's worthy of ridicule. But I'm going to send you a son. I'm going to send you my son. And he's going to come to you, and he's going to come with a task to achieve, and I'm giving him authority to do it. As a weak child, as a weak human being who's experiencing everything that we've been through. And the task is twofold. And he's coming to do something. We know that this son was coming to do something, because we're looking back and we've got it, we've caught it, we understand it, or we're beginning to understand it, or we're looking in and thinking, yes, maybe. But actually, it wasn't what he came to achieve. It was what he came to be and to do. Jesus' task was to reveal the Father's heart. That was the task that the Father said, go and be my son. Be my son. Demonstrate as this human being that's been through it all and knows exactly what it's like to be human. Demonstrate what my heart is like for them. And that's what Jesus did. And that's why Jesus had to come as a baby and has to come as a child. I'm telling you nothing new. I want to encourage you. As I've been encouraged by thinking about this, I've had foreknowledge of this, so I had to think about it for the last week or so. That Christmas. We know the marks of Christmas today, don't we? We're in it. It's all over us. It's about commercialism and sentimentality. And that's okay. It's great to be sentimental, and it's great to have commercialism, particularly if you make your living out of it. In itself, but those are the marks. But the mark of Jesus coming was in weakness and in vulnerability as the Son to show the Father's heart to a world that is in chains and a world that is broken. People like you and I, to demonstrate that God has got a soft heart for people, and people like you and I, and the people that we mix with. But he also had the other side was the thing he had to do, was to die. He had to die in order that the price might be paid that only he, as the eternal Son of God, could pay, to deal with the price and the effect of rebellion in our hearts. And for those that could see it, who were willing to see it and wanted to see it, transformation out of weakness, introduction to the Son. The other side to this fatherness was, which is just worth underlining and reminding ourselves again, that when Jesus came as this weak baby child, submitting, Jesus, the Son of God, submitting to that which he had created, it actually tore the Father's heart apart. It was agony for the Father to allow his Son to go into this and become like that what had been created, which now was fallen, which was now a total pig's ear, eating each other up, self-centered, and all the rest of it, just like we are in our 21st century. It broke his heart to allow his Son to go, just as it would break your heart to allow your Son to go to places that you knew that he was having to be vulnerable in a desperate and profound sort of way. It broke his heart. But it was the only way of demonstrating that his heart was soft towards me. and towards you and towards us. Wow. Unto you a baby is born, unto you a son is given. And the government can be, is now on his shoulders if we give it to him. If we give the government of our life to him, it's working, it's happening, it's beginning, it's already happened. And a time is going to come when everything will be submitted to that authority. And when you're dead, are we allowed to talk about death? When you're dead, you will experience that totally. That will be my experience and your experience totally. This rulership of this amazing, wonderful, soft Father's heart. What a difference this baby makes. What a difference a babe makes. Sorry. Some of you don't remember that, but it's a fair I do. What a difference this son makes. What a privilege to be in the process of being changed more and more from one degree of wow glory to another. Sharon's going to come and tell us a little something about what's been happening in her world. Have you got a microphone? This is Sharon. I'm sure you all met Sharon. Bless you.
Thanks, Barry.
So what difference has made to Christmas for you this year as a result of what happened in the earlier in the year?
Well, this year, the most wonderful thing that I could ever wish for happened in my life. I'm sorry. Because Jesus came and knocked on the door of my heart. And he said, I know all about you. Know everything there is to know. You don't have to worry about anything. And I want you to let me in. And I think he'd been out there for ages. Because my friends had been praying for me and saying, I'm trying to sell me Jesus. I was like, are you on commission? What is it all about? And it's about the most amazing thing you could ever wish for. And it's the only thing you need in your life. You don't need... Last year, I wouldn't have been in church. I would have been rushing around shopping, getting people everything that I thought they needed and wanted, just filling empty holes with emptiness. And all that anybody needs for Christmas is God. And now I'm one of those women that is trying to sell him to everyone. And I think I'm irritating some people, but I'm really sorry about that. But I mean, sometimes just a boring bush journey, I just want to get up and say, did you know? Everybody. But I've not done that yet. I'll hold back. But he's brought amazing people into my life. He's brought wonderful people in my path. And everybody at Grace is wonderful. And he planned it all for me. And I can't believe it, that he was there all the time. And I just want everybody to have him in their life. And thanks a lot.
Yeah, praise it. Woo! Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Something that's really impressed itself upon me, and I felt a real challenge. We have the opportunity of singing a song. Can you put the words on the screen if you can find that? And I just want to challenge you with. Yeah, this is a song that has just been, over the last few months, has really been coming to my mind. It's a song from one of the albums, For Your Grace Finds Me, by Matt Redman, and it's called Mercy. And some of you, I'm sure, will know it. But it's the chorus that keeps coming. And just, it's that first line. And it's my strong desire for myself And I would like to encourage you. May we never lose the wonder of his mercy. Because this babe, this son, this child coming into the world, it's God's mercy on us, breaking in and giving us the opportunity to actually to know him. But it's so easy too, after we've been a Christian for a month or maybe a year or 10 years or half a century or however long, it's so easy to become blasé. It's so easy when we look at Christmas and just see the commercialism and it rancors with us, or just see the sentimentality about this little baby, meek and mild, who he wasn't. He did all the human things, and he did cry at night, and he was human. But in that, in these things is the price. In these things are the significance. May I never lose the wonder of what Jesus did on behalf of the Father, and what he revealed of the Father's heart and his intention and his plans and purposes. May, as we're going into Christmas, as we're going to this season, which comes around every year and it's a time of remembrance, may we be excited. May we not lose the wonder. May we get more of the wonder of this back. May the Spirit of God just rejuvenate us and re-excite us with the immense price that was paid through this little baby in a manger, and to be stirred and to be challenged and to be excited and have our heart broken again, have our hearts stirred again, that as we look to a new year, our hearts and I fill our heads and yes, I want to be yes for what you've got for me. I want to be yes in obedience to you. I want to say yes to your kingly rule and reign in my life. And I want to be on my front foot of you because I'm excited with the wonder. I'm overtaken by the irrational, nonsensical craziness of what you have actually done, which brings me life. And you want this to be the experience of so many other people that we meet and we mix with. So I'd just like to read the words. May I never lose the wonder. Oh, the wonder of your mercy. May I sing your hallelujah. Hallelujah, amen. And we're going to sing that now. And I'm going to invite you to stand. And if you stand with me now, and the band's going to lead us. And if it's in your heart, or even in your head, if it's in your head, then go with that and hopefully it'll touch your heart. Say, yes, this is my prayer to you, Father, as well. Give me back the wonder. I want more of the awesomeness to fill me. May I never sing the wonder. So let's sing this in praise and maybe even worship to him as the band leads us. If you don't know it, just listen it. We're going to listen to it. We're going to sing it a few times around, and it's very easy to pick up.